Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world. And it is a toxic world out there. There are lots of toxic chemicals in consumer products, in our homes, in our cars, in just walking around outside, and then pesticides on the lawn, in the park. Every place you go, there's toxic chemicals. But there are also places where there are not toxic chemicals. We can make our homes into havens of toxic free living. We can remove toxic chemicals from our bodies. There's lots of people who are doing lots of things to reduce the amount of toxic chemicals in the world, and that's what we talk about on this show. Today is Wednesday, February 26th. I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, and today we're going to be talking about multiple chemical sensitivity, but not just the illness of multiple chemical sensitivity, because this is a particular condition that is the result of toxic chemical exposure, but many, many illnesses are the result of toxic chemical exposure. This was something I found out when I was writing my latest book, Toxic Free. I actually studied all the health effects that I could find in a new time. I've been studying this for more than 30 years, but I just took a new look at everything. And what I found was that every single illness can be associated with toxic chemical exposure. It doesn't matter what symptom you have. It doesn't matter what disease you're suffering from. All of them can be associated in some way or another with exposure to toxic chemicals. So it's affecting everybody in many different ways, even down to the cellular level and down to the level of our DNA, and how children will be born in future generations are being affected by toxic chemical exposures today. So this is something that we all need to be paying attention to. My guest today is Glenna Chance. Hi, Glenna. Hello, are you there?
Yep, can you hear me?
Great, I can hear you now.
Okay.
She's the author of a book called Which Poison Will Change Your Life. While pursuing her career in music in 1988, Glenna was poisoned by an illegal pesticide application. Her life-altering diagnosis of the chronic illness multiple chemical sensitivity catapulted her into a new direction, and she has since battled the physical ramifications and lack of legal parity that often accompany MCS disability. Glenna, you and I have things in common because I was pursuing my career in music in 1978 when I discovered that I was poisoned by, it wasn't an illegal pesticide application. It was just the toxic chemicals that I was exposed to in my average American home. Mm. And I ended up with the same MCS. I shouldn't say the same MCS, because I think it turns out in different ways for different people. And we both went on to feel that it was so important to be helping other people to recover from it or not get it in the first place. So would you tell me your story?
Okay. I also want to say it's a real pleasure to talk to you after all these years, because your books kept me going.
Thank you.
In the late 80s, after I was pesticide poisoned.
Thank you.
And there wasn't that much out there at the time.
Right.
You know, there's a lot
out there
now. That's
why I had to write something.
Yeah. It gave me, you know, something to work for and work through, seeing that there was another person. And again, to see that you know, we were in similar professional situations, that was another plus.
But, thank you. What's your instrument?
Viola and violin.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. And what happened at the time was I was in Syracuse, New York. I was playing in the Syracuse Symphony. I was in graduate school full-time and working a full-time 40-hour office job. People say, how do you do that? I don't remember anymore. But, somebody, I guess, called an exterminator at that office building, which was in the Civic Center. For no reason, really. It wasn't just somebody had a thought that maybe there were some fleas or something, paper fleas, I think they said.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't notified, which, you know, is against the law. And they just came in, and what they sprayed was diazinon, an organophosphate, which was clearly labeled never, ever, ever, ever for indoor use. And I'm the kind of person that I find out things. Yes. So if the people, my employers, couldn't tell me, then I called the exterminator and said, what did you use? So that's how I found out. I think it's a lot of this investigative work is a matter of timing. You know, you have to make a phone call fast. In fact, one job I had subsequent to that, some years later, I was there on a Saturday, and they had told me when I applied for the job that they don't pesticide in that building. I was there on a Saturday, and here came the exterminator. And I ran down, and I said, I need a copy of that receipt of your bill. And they gave it to me, you know, so I could prove, yes, indeed, they did.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, then they threw me out of the job, which happens with no notice. They say, well, if you can't work here, you have to leave. And they tell you, get up from your desk and pack your things and leave. And that means, you know, you can't have unemployment or anything else. You're just out of a job. So that's what happened to me. I went, and this is something that I advise people to do. Don't just, if something like that happens, forget all you learned, your work ethic, and being a doobie, or whatever they used to call it, because that's what I did. I thought, well, I'm supposed to come to work here. So I went the next day, and I went for 2 or 3 days until I was just sitting in a chair at home, unable to breathe, unable to walk, unable to think, and finally said, I can't do this anymore. Which I think is another thing people don't understand about MCS. They say, well, what do you mean? Can't you just take something? Can't you just drag yourself in there? Because there are a lot of tired people, and I say they're toxic people. There are a lot of tired people dragging themselves to work every day. But the thing with MCS, and you've probably experienced this too, is there comes a point where you just can't.
I totally know what that is. And for people who haven't experienced that, it's just like everything, like you just can't function at all.
Right.
And there's not, you can't even access that part of you that can push you to do something, you know,
but right.
It's just like, it's all down. I got to that point in my life where I considered that I was disabled because I couldn't get myself out of bed in the morning on a reliable basis and go do something.
Right.
And so I just had to say, I'm disabled and that's it. And a lot of people with MCS get to that point because these chemicals are very, very powerful and that they're affecting all of us to some degree in some way.
Right.
It's just that some people are affected more dramatically and to a greater degree and in ways that are more obvious. And sometimes people are affected more quickly and then other people are not being affected or they think they're not being affected. And then 10 years later, boom, they're down too. And it doesn't matter if like, you know, I used to work for an endocrinologist in his office treating people actually with MCS. I was the person who did the test to see what they were sensitive to. And he once said to me, that because my mother had died of cancer. And he said, you have MCS, your mother had cancer, but it was all the same cause that you were exposed to all the same chemicals. It's just your body's responded differently.
Right. And, you know, all disease is imbalance anyway.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, you get exposed to something and you get thrown off, your body systems get thrown off. So how it manifests itself is with anything. It's the weakest point. You know,
That's right.
We find that in water, you know, it's always going to find its, you know, if it's going to come through your foundation, it's going to find the weakest point there and it's going to make a little hole through, you know, so, you know, yeah, whatever your weakest point is, that's where it's going to hit you.
Yeah. That is. And so for people with MCS, that's, it's an immune system thing. And so that would be a person whose immune system would be the weak point in their body, and in someone else it would be another area of their body, and they would get cancer or they'd get heart disease or whatever is going on with them. But it just has to do with the weak point in your body, but it also has to do with the types of chemicals you're being exposed to, and different chemicals target different organs in your body. We need to take a break, Jenna.
Oh, okay.
Glenna, sorry. We need to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we'll go on. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Glenna Chance, author of Which Poison Will Change Your Life. She also has a website called mcsadvocacy.com. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. My guest today is Glenna Chance. Oh, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Glenna Chance. She's the author of Which Poison Will Change Your Life and has a service for people with MCS called MCSAdvocacy.com. So, Glenna, you were playing in the symphony, and then you got sprayed with exposed to pesticides, and then you became chemically sensitive. And then how did you get from that point to establishing MCS advocacy and writing your book?
Well, I was very fortunate, I have to say, that I actually, the doctor that I had, who was actually in Rochester, and I was in Syracuse, was a clinical ecologist. Mm-hmm. I want to say that first, because so many people, and with all the invisible illnesses, what are invisible illnesses anyway? There are things that are discounted because nobody takes the trouble to actually do the research and see what's going on. But they're life-altering. Anyway, most of the people that develop MCS or other of these invisible illnesses are really battered around the system. They're sent to doctors who know nothing about it. They're sent to psychologists, psychiatrists. They can't get validation. They can't get help. They can't get well. And so I was very fortunate because the doctor I already was seeing was a clinical ecologist. So I at least had validation.
Yes.
Even though MCS treatment is mostly just avoidance. You know, don't go here, don't go there, don't work anymore.
Right.
Don't, you know, which is more easily said than done, of course. But I, it was pretty much out of necessity that I started doing advocacy work because I had to help myself. Again, with not much out there. You know, your books were out there. There were a few books out there, but not a lot. And also no internet. So if you wanted information, you had to go to a library. And when you're in the throes of debilitating illness, it's hard to go to a library. They probably best decided and things like that. So, you know, I had to find out information for myself. And then, you know, as we all do, we had a certain amount of compassion for other people going through the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I tried to get information out there for other people to access. And then as the internet was coming, you know, coming along, then I could put something up called a website and do things like that. I get inquiries from all over the place, which is satisfying. People
Good.
See it. And I give them information on how to find a doctor, how to get legal help, and tell them that there are already laws on the books. You know, we're not anymore trying to establish MCS as something that fits the parameters of ADA law. That's been done. People worked long and hard to do that for us, and I think that happened in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And that's done. So it's mostly just trying to stand up for yourself and knowing that these things are on the books, knowing that you are covered legally and that you do have a leg to stand on. Because the people that you go to, doctors, unless you get a clinical ecologist, doctors and lawyers and things like that, they're listening to the mainstream who says it's not a valid illness, there are no laws, there is no help, and that's not right. So
yes.
It really helps people when they know, number one, they're not alone, number two, there are laws to protect them out there already, and they do have a leg to stand on.
Well, that's very good that you're doing this, because I remember the times when nobody was doing this and that people were wondering, well, where can I get legal help and how can I get Social Security? How can I can't work. How can you, you know, and that it wasn't recognized as a disability. And I remember that. I remember I was a fortunate person that I had family to help me. And so I wasn't alone, and people believed me. And so when I said that I needed to take toxic chemicals out of my home, I had people to help me. But I know that not everybody is in that situation. So you say, I'm looking on your website, and you say that MCS lies outside of the realm of current medical knowledge. I think that more and more, though, people are recognizing it. And then you say, as with any misunderstood illness, the victims are considered outcasts and are rejected not only by the medical profession, but also by those who administer basic social services. And this is an important thing, what you said I'm about to read. We are, for all practical purposes, housebound. We cannot work. We cannot go to the store. We cannot ride a bus. We cannot go to church, go to school, or find housing. There's no services in the community for us. The doctors who can treat us are usually not local and usually do not accept health insurance if we're fortunate to have health insurance. And this is, I mean, this really is the picture of what it's like to be MCS, because when you... when your body has been damaged by toxic chemicals, then you really, any chemicals you're exposed to makes your body react, and you cannot go places where these chemicals are, which makes you housebound. That's what it's like. You know, I think a lot of people don't understand that.
It's an interesting thing because you go through phases. You know, you're dealing with, I think you said 30 years of this. I'm dealing with a little over a quarter century of this. And at first, you know, you go through phases of, you know, I have to work, I have to try, and then you take yourself totally out, which is one of the reasons I wrote this book, was to, you know, touch base with my friends and family and colleagues and let them know why I dropped out of sight for decades, you know, but because I was too embarrassed. I didn't know what to tell them because nobody understands it. But, you know, and then you get to a phase where it's like, I'm just not going to put myself into toxic situations. Mm-hmm. And I always say, I'm so glad, my body must be really functional because it tells me what's a dangerous situation.
Yes, yes.
Why would I force my body to accept toxins?
I want to stop you right here because I think this is such an important thing because we do recognize, you and I and other people who are aware of this recognize when we're in a toxic situation because our bodies say, hey, this is toxic. Like, you know, I've never smoked cigarettes, but you know, when somebody starts smoking cigarettes, what happens? You cough, your body says, no, this is a horrible thing. And you just keep smoking and smoking until your body doesn't cough anymore. Mm-hmm. But when you go into a toxic situation, you might cough or get a headache or, I need to go to break, but I'll finish my sentence.
Okay.
You might cough or get a headache or sneeze or space out or whatever, and people aren't aware of those little symptoms. We'll talk more about this when we come back.
Okay.
This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. My guest today is Glenna Chance, and we're talking about MCS. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Glenna Chance, author of Which Poison Will Change Your Life. Glenna, your book is Which Poisons Will Change Your Life. The subtitle is an MCS Survivor's Eye-Opening View into the Socio-Political Forces which make today's invisible illnesses possible and probable. Now, you have a lot of information in here about toxic chemicals and where they're found, but I've never read another book that talks about the social and political forces that make these illnesses possible and probable. So I'd like to talk more about that aspect of it than talk about where toxic chemicals are in products. We talk about that a lot. So, first of all, would you tell us more about invisible illnesses? You gave us a definition earlier, but would you give us some examples of invisible illnesses besides MCS?
Oh, well, the ones that people always hear about, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, but it extends to things like MS and illnesses that people talk about as more mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I'd like to also add about mainstream is that one reason that the so-called invisible illnesses, or the mysterious ones, MS at least, you know, they say, oh, this is quantitative, which ours is too, by the way, and that's another thing. MS is quantitative, you know, there are quantitative tests, or for MCS, I mean, you know, everybody says it's idiopathic. Well, nothing is idiopathic. Nothing in life is idiopathic. And if illnesses were idiopathic, they would just leave it at that, and there wouldn't be research done. Nothing is idiopathic. They just
Tell us what idiopathic means, because I'm sure there's a lot of listeners that don't know that word.
Yeah. Idiopathic means arising from no cause. There's no known cause for something.
Okay,
well, of course, there's always a known cause, and you have to you know, look at it scientifically, which is what I do in the book. I give quantitative scientific facts. But, you know, MCS is not a profitable disease. It's not profitable.
Well, it's not something that you take a pill for. They can't sell you a drug for it.
Right, I mean, right. We're not consumers of pharmaceuticals.
No.
We're not consumers of commercial advertising because we can't purchase or take part in mainstream products and activities. We're not consumers of the healthcare industry because we can't use mainstream medicine. We can't use a hospital because of access violations. We can't go to a long-term facility. We're not part of medical research. So
I know.
This is
it's
why
like you just kind of have to have this other life that isn't part of the industrial world in order to survive this. Yeah.
You know, the invisible illnesses is something you sometimes call them orphan illnesses or orphan diseases. But the thing is, you know, the one thing I want to emphasize is that the benchmark for illness definition has always been reliable and reproducible tests. And we have that.
Mm-hmm.
People, you know, medical professionals tell people there are no tests and everything, and they've said that mantra so long, they actually believe it. You know, and one thing I always say about, you know, what is an expert? They throw the word expert around a lot. And what does the word expert mean? You know, who determines if someone is an expert? Who funded the expert? Is the expert improving the human condition or maintaining the status quo? You know, so you have to do your research, you know, which is what I've done in this book a lot. And when you talk about the socio-political aspect of it, when you talk about disease, it leads to, you know, life-altering illness leads to the inability to think critically and logically, and that leads to the inability to learn. And that leads to bad decisions in life, and that leads to skewed life goals, and that leads to violence. So it's really a social problem. Any illness and disease is a social problem.
I totally agree. I totally agree because toxic chemicals do affect us on every level. That it's not just a physical thing, but it's also, it can affect your emotions, it can affect your ability to think, it can affect spiritual awareness even.
Right.
And so it's not just a physical problem. It's not just about going to the doctor, but it really affects your whole entire life.
Right. And in our case, too, or in a lot of people, you know, it's like you had an idea how your life was going to be. And I don't want to say that only MCS people, you know, had this big trauma or something. Anybody with a major illness, but you had this idea how your life was going to be, and then it totally got sidetracked. And so, you know, a lot of the people, this is why people call illness a gift, and it sounds trite before you're ill, but then you find out what that means. You know, hopefully you're coming to a better understanding of the big life picture and everything like that, but still, you know, you're just left kind of stunned, and even more stunned when you have no support at all, no social support, no medical support, no legal support. You're just kind of stunned and turning around in circles until you figure out what to do with yourself.
Well, that is exactly right. And again, I'll say that I was fortunate that I had people around me that, and I had a doctor who was a clinical ecologist, and I had, there was, where I lived, there were actually three doctors who were clinical ecologists.
Wow.
And so, it was, I mean, the first one diagnosed me, and then I went and got treated by the second one, and then I went and worked for the third one. So
wow.
I was never in an environment where nobody believed me or that the doctor said there's nothing wrong with you. I'm really concerned just on a larger picture that there's so many doctors who don't recognize the problem, not just with MCS, but that don't recognize that toxic chemicals are causing so many illnesses. And so we still have the normal standard medical you know, you go into the doctor's office and they diagnose you and they give you a drug and that doesn't handle it at all. It just doesn't handle it at all. And you may have fewer symptoms, but you're not getting to the cause of anything.
Well, fewer symptoms in the short run, perhaps, not in the long run, but,
well, yeah.
You know, because that's going to be toxic to your system too, drugs, but
But you know, I think that anybody should be able to go to any doctor that's covered by insurance, or however, whatever the system is, that people should be able to go to any doctor and have a correct diagnosis.
Right, appropriate
that they're
treatment.
Being poisoned. Mm-hmm. And since everybody in the world is being poisoned right now, this is like the number one diagnosis, and doctors can't even recognize it. They're not even asking the question.
The doctors, and we know this, or maybe some people don't, well, listen up. The doctors only know as much as they're taught in their curriculum. And the curriculum in the medical schools is funded by the pharmaceutical companies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's their vested interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, you know, as we talked about, there's no profit in these illnesses that are caused by poisonings and industrial toxins.
Well, I think that more and more doctors are starting to wake up. On my website, you can go to toxicfreebody.com, and there's a page that's, I think it says professional help in the menu, and it lists the types of doctors that you can go to if you think that you need some help with diagnosis of toxic exposure and healing from that.
That's great.
There are doctors who actually do this today, many more than when Glenna and I started. We need to take another break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. My guest today is Glenna Chance, and her website is mcsadvocacy.com. She's the author of Which Poison Will Change Your Life. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Glenna Chance, author of Which Poison Will Change Your Life. Glenna, so what about the political forces that are contributing to this?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's my chapter 6, which I named Hand in Hand in Hand. Yeah, that's one thing about the book. I don't just say what something is and why it's bad, but I say, you know, how it even came to market. And there are so many ins and outs. It's overwhelming at this point. I mean, politics and all that stuff, it's always been like this. People with big egos trying to get profits and things like that. That's never going to change over humanity. It's just that now we're dealing with such poisons that we're dealing with the very existence of mankind, I think. I don't like to be doom and gloom.
Well, I think we are, too.
Yeah.
We are.
And, the ins and outs of the politics and stuff, it just enforces the social disconnect, which is valuing profit over life. That's human life, plant life, animal life. Putting energy on cover-ups instead of accountability. Promoting healthcare policies based on a one-size-fits-all fallacy. And that's a particular point of mine. It's like you just can't make everybody conform. Everybody is different. And you can't say, you know, you have to take, let me just say, I have a great doctor now, and every time I see her, she says, let me tell you what's coming down the pike, Glenna. And the last time I saw her, she said, with the new healthcare system, she said, if you brought your blood analysis numbers into me, and the government says you need to be within this parameter, and your cholesterol level, for example, says this, but I know that because she's also a toxicologist, you know, if I back this up, then I can find this comes from here and this comes from here. I have a picture of your physical makeup, but the government only has a set of charts. So now they will say, if your numbers are this, I, as your doctor, have to prescribe cholesterol medicine. Okay, and you have to fill the prescription. If you don't, I don't get paid for the medical appointment.
Okay, oh, my God.
How wrong is that? Okay, because now people are going to fill prescriptions and dump them down the toilet if they're not going to take them. I won't do
it. Oh, my God.
Because I'm a rebel. I would never fill it.
No, I'm not taking it either, and I don't want to pay for it.
Well, I don't want anything attached to my name saying I did that, ever, on a record. So, you know, these are the kinds of things. And what I don't understand about all the political things having to do with, everything in this society is, What are these people who are out for profit and just on a roll, you know, and no matter what it does to everybody else, what do they think is their future? You know, what do they think they're going to drink for water? What do they think they're going to eat for food? And don't they care about their own children and grandchildren? This is what I don't get. Are they not asking the question, or do they have some secret plan that we don't know about? But see, I can't worry about them. I have to worry about me.
I think they're not asking the question. I think that they're not asking the question. You know, I saw a show on TV. Now, I'm trying to remember the exact name and where I saw it. It was on the History Channel, I think. And I think it was called something like The Men Who Shaped America or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was talking about, the whole show was about the men who established our industrial age. And one of them was Mr. Rockefeller. If I'm remembering everything right, he was the one that founded Standard Oil, I think it is. And but in the beginning, what he was doing was he was selling kerosene, not gasoline, because this was before there were even cars. And so so he was getting, you know, the kerosene was being made. And as they were manufacturing it, it's like the gasoline, what we're now using for gasoline. And, you know, I don't have notes in front of me, so I may be getting some of this wrong, but the idea is here. So I think that they were distilling the kerosene, and then the gasoline was the waste material. And there was a scene where they just showed like this gasoline just flowing out over the land because there was nothing to, you know, this toxic stuff is just like going out from the factory because there were no laws, there were no regulations. And eventually, you know, they started finding uses for all these different byproducts of distilling the crude oil. But you know, those byproducts of this toxic stuff, instead of going out in the environment, now go into our consumer products. And this is where this kind of comes from. I mean, it was like I was just looking at this picture and I'm going, well, this is what's going on. This is, you know, that it started out with this one product and then there was all these byproducts and then it changed into all these other things. But it's all about the manufacture of that product, of about somebody saying, I have kerosene, I have this, I want to make money. And they're not even asking the question. They're not saying, is this good for the environment? They're not saying, is this good for health? They're not concerned about the welfare of the people that are using their product. They're concerned about the profit.
Right.
And I think that the world would be a very, very, very different place if everybody who was producing products would say, what is the effect of this product on the environment and what is the effect of this product on the health of the customer who's going to buy it?
Well, I think also just ask
that, those two simple questions, and actually answer them and make the product so that it actually benefits life instead of hurting it, it would be very, very, very different. Some people are doing that, but we still need to have more people doing that.
And the thing is, you know, the egos and the money grubbing are never going to go away, but you can turn on a dime overnight and say, okay, we can still make the same profit, but without poisoning everybody. You know,
yes.
Obviously, you know, solar. We'll go solar instead of gasoline or something like that. You know, you could change it overnight, and everybody would still be making profit. So what's
I totally agree. I mean,
everybody's
I really
still
think...
working. The big wigs are still making profits.
Yep. It's just that people aren't asking that question of how can we do this in a way that supports life?
Yeah.
And I think that just, I mean, I don't know the answer of why everybody isn't thinking that, asking themselves like that, why their conscience hasn't woken up.
I think people were trained to trust people like the government, their elected officials and things like that. And they're still in that mode of trust. And they don't understand that everybody's being railroaded. I mean, I think a statistic I read the other day was 90% of taxpayers want GMOs labeled. 90%, but their representatives won't represent them. So I don't know how you stop a train, you know. I mean, it's people need to trust their own instinct. It's very important.
I agree with that.
You know, if you say I'm sick, then don't let somebody tell you you're not. And I think when people start trusting their own instincts and not just believing, you know, there's so much, everybody's awash in all this media and everything. You can't get away from it now, you know, unless you just don't have any TV or internet or something like that. So it's a combination of all this information, everybody telling you what you should think, and everybody's minds are pickled from being poisoned. So they can't even assimilate actual information. So they're just drifting along in life, hoping somebody will, you know, do the right thing. But, you know, I don't know.
Yes. Well, it does. I think that that's a good way to put it, that people's minds are pickled from the toxic chemicals. I think that that's true. And I think that a lot of the inability to think, a lot of the inability to learn and all these things is all affected by toxic chemical exposure. I mean, really, it just over and over and over, you can see that when people get away from toxic chemicals, they can think more clearly. Yeah. Just wouldn't you say that that's a very common thing?
Well, yeah, you know it in your, I think everybody, if people would actually analyze instead of just mindlessly going through their day and say, wow, I was in here and I feel better. Well, I'll think about that now, you know, really analyze everything. It's like people who get MCS, most of the people can track back and say, oh man, if I look at my whole life, there was this, there was that, there was this, you know, I used to like the smell of paint thinner, you know, or something like that, you know,
mm-hmm.
And you know, all the points where you were exposed to chemicals. I mean, people can usually track that back if they think.
I was thinking the other day about my grandparents, and that when I would go into my grandfather's garage, he always had gasoline, like cans of gasoline. Mm. And so as a child, I didn't know what that smell was. I just knew this is my grandfather's garage. I'd go hang out in the garage with him and be breathing gasoline the whole entire time. You know, but then when I figured out what gasoline smelled like, I went, oh, that's my grandfather's garage, you know, and, you know, you just don't even think of these things. Glenda, we only have about a minute left. Is there any closing words you'd like to give us?
Well, you know, I'd like people to remember that the messages that are seen and heard are the ones that become the most ingrained as the norm and the truth in mainstream consciousness. And that's not necessarily so.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you really need to, again, trust your instincts. You know how you feel. Don't let somebody tell you something that's contrary to what you know as truth about yourself. And just, you know, I don't know. Start with yourself. You know, you can't fight everybody. I'm a rebel, but I'm tired of fighting myself. You know, I've been fighting for a long time. And try to concentrate on yourself and your own health. Okay, use facts like I write in the book. You know, it's absolutely just scientific fact. It's irrefutable fact, okay? Use that as ammunition if you need ammunition. And just try to get yourself well. And then, you know, try to help somebody
else. Thank you. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd, and we'll be back tomorrow.